Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Yes. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But today, it's specifically about Avengers Infinity War, which, if you've been listening to this podcast, gets me, Kyle Sconewill, very excited, as well as my co-host, Robbie Earle.
Oh,
Robbie,
absolutely.
Are you as excited today? I know we say excited a lot, but today it is not an overstatement.
How could you not be excited when you're about to watch Avengers Infinity War, Kyle? What makes me so excited right now is we are about to watch Avengers Infinity War, not just talk about Avengers Infinity War.
I know. Okay, so the bad side of this whole thing was coronavirus kind of ruined our plans to be together. We were going to be together to watch this movie and then do an episode together. But we're not going to let that get us down. We're just like Thor.
Nope.
We have a mission here and we're on it. And so today, we are actually doing this podcast somewhat live by both hitting play on this movie and going to give you our version of a live commentary, if you will, of Infinity War.
Yep.
We think it's going to be fun, so don't panic. So a little behind the curtain here, Robbie and I, when we do this podcast, both rewatch the movie on our own, take some notes, and get together. And then when we start recording the podcast, in the past, we've been trying to do a format something like, hey, what didn't work, what does work, and what's foundational. But as we got further and further into the rewatch, some of the movies just got so good that there was so little that didn't work.
Right.
So we started trying to be just more linear going through the film. So all that being said, today will be fun for us because we are literally going to just go through the film for you.
It should be said that we have also done our due diligence and done a
yes.
classic rewatch prior to this, as many of you saw on Instagram. But
Fair.
This is a unique moment for us to kind of get to still watch this together, even though we're not necessarily together.
I got my emotional visceral response already out. So this is already the tamed version of Kyle watching this movie. So if you can believe that or not. This movie and Avengers Endgame were filmed at the exact same time.
Right.
So that's actually probably my favorite thing about this rewatch order is that in release order, these movies had a movie or two splitting them up. And there's just something really special about watching these movies back to back. They were filmed that way. The story flows so perfectly that way. So much so, actually, that we had a listener write us. There's actually been a fan that put together a 5.5-hour
yeah.
cut of this movie, then directly into some of the post-credit scenes that fall right after, directly into Endgame, and you can watch it as 1 5.5-hour like masterpiece.
Yeah. It's really
interesting. I have not done that yet, but I do like the feeling of that.
Yeah, I haven't watched the entire thing, but I basically watched the kind of key transition moments because I was curious to see how he handled them. And some of it is really well done. The way that he laces in some other dusting scenes that we get after Infinity War
right.
within that first Infinity War scene is really cool. There are a few things that, you know, like I really like the kind of drama of the way that the film is split into two parts, even though I do think that it works to view it as kind of volume one and volume two of the same story. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, if you're curious, as we all are, for kind of a different way of viewing this, that might be something fun for you to go check out.
Well, and if you remember, when we didn't know anything about these movies, at one point it was just called like Avengers Part 1 and 2. We didn't know. Like, it was so tied together that they didn't even call it that. Then at some point they changed it to, hey, this is Infinity War and the other one's untitled. Remember that? How long we had to wait for the title. I will say I'm interested to watch Endgame right after this, because this rewatch moves these movies right together. Some of the fun of Endgame was that we had to wait a calendar year.
Right.
So there was that year gap of sitting with these events we're about to watch.
Right.
That I don't know you'll ever be able to replicate again. But.
Well, I think it's also important to note that there was a reason for changing that titling. I've seen some interviews with Marcus and McFeely in particular that have really wanted to emphasize that while it is one story, they view Infinity War as its own film with its own kind of hero's journey. And we've talked a lot about how they viewed Thanos as really the protagonist of Infinity War. So the end of that movie is kind of closing out his journey to date. And so then Endgame.
Yes.
So I think that
they didn't want it to be a part one,
if
you will.
Yeah, exactly. I think they wanted that movie, which I think makes the movie all the more powerful, right? Because if you view it totally as a part one, it's like what we've said before, then it's like, oh, well, it's a cliffhanger, what's going to happen? But if you view that as a movie in itself, then it's like, oh, this is the end. This is what's happened, you know?
Right. The highest compliment I can give this movie, and we'll get into this more a little bit down the road, but the highest compliment I can give it is that weeks after I watched this movie for the first time, if I really like had to think about it, did I know that Spider-Man couldn't be dead or the Guardians? Like, I knew they were going to make another movie. As unbelievable of a job that Marvel did hiding that stuff, if you remember that.
Right.
They like waited to announce anything. I still knew in my heart they had to come back. But this movie is so well crafted that I never don't feel the consequences.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, yes, I know deep down, but it doesn't make the ending any less shocking for some reason. Like, I still will never, ever, ever forget where I was when I first saw the ending of this movie. And we've talked about that in this podcast so much, but I think that's why this movie holds such a special place for me, is because I was in an IMAX theater in Nashville and I walked out going like, I have chills now. I couldn't believe what I just saw. That was how, as I was watching this movie and it was unfolding, I kept thinking, where is this going to end? Are they going to stop it before he gets the stones? Are they going to stop it with like the Titan crew defeating him a little bit? Or are they going to stop it with Thor actually plunging the axe in his chest? And then it kept not stopping, And then he actually snaps. And I'm like, wait, what? Then it actually stops with him on the porch. I'm like, there's no way that can be the end of the movie.
Well,
so in that way, it isn't a part one. I just never will forget where I was leaving that theater.
Well, and we'll have to talk about this more next episode when we're talking about part two. But I noticed that on my last rewatch that when you do think of Thanos as your hero, it makes so much sense because, like, you know, at the end of the movie is whenever you always have the hero hit these moments where you're like, oh, he's never going to do it because here, like, things have just gotten harder and harder and harder. And we keep having that.
Yep.
From his perspective, right? Because it's like, oh, now Thor's here. And oh, like now Wanda's out on the field. And oh, they got the Mind Stone out. How is he getting it? It's like at the end, he's the one that overcomes. But it's tragic when he overcomes for everyone else, you know?
Yep. And okay, before we get started in the actual film, before we both hit play, I want to say one other thought on Thanos. There's something about Thanos that is so captivating to me. I know that he is cruel, and I know that his mission is not something I would want, but there's something about his destiny that I'm just so still drawn to. So the whole movie, they balance what you're just saying so perfectly. It's kind of like, you're almost like, this is his hero's journey. You're almost pulling for him at times.
Right.
And then you're like, wait, hold on. No. He's cruel. They'll remind you, oh, he's evil. But then you're kind of like, wait, I kind of resonate with him. He's not killing everyone. He's just kind of trying to fulfill his destiny. Like, leave him alone. But wait, he's cruel. Right. It's just like, there's this perfect balance of like, and that's what I've commented before, how much I love the song Porch. It's like sad, but fulfilling. It's such a weird thing. And that's what I think I'm so drawn to Thanos by, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So let's watch Infinity War.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
To our audience, here's what we're going to do. We talked about this in our To Infinity and Beyond episode. But all of April, we're going to be watching these movies. We're going to have Infinity War Part 1 this week, Infinity War Part 2 next week, and then Endgame Part 1 and Part 2 the following 2 weeks. So brace yourself. It's a four-parter for these two movies. So today we're just going to be covering the first half of Avengers Infinity War. And by way of a proper introduction, I know I'm talking a lot, but that's the point of a podcast. okay, so we're going to be watching Avengers Infinity War today. It has such a great cast, and you know everybody, but I'm just going
to
read this so that
it can
again blow your mind at how many names I'm about to read, and this won't even be everybody, and how many notable A-list actors this is, okay?
Yep.
Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, Chris Hemsworth as Thor, Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner, Chris Evans as Steve Rogers, Scarlett Johansson as Natasha Romanoff, Benedict Cumberbatch as Stephen Strange, Don Cheadle as James Rhodey Rhodes, Tom Holland as Peter Parker, Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa, Paul Bettany Vision, Elizabeth Olsen, Wanda Maximoff, Anthony Mackie, Sam Wilson, Sebastian Stan, James Buchanan Barnes, Tom Hiddleston as Loki, Idris Elba as Heimdall, Peter Dinklage as Eitri, Benedict Wan as Wong, Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts, Bradley Cooper as Rocket, Vin Diesel as Goot, Zoe Saldana as Gamora, Dave Bautista as Drax the Destroyer, Karen Gillan as Nebula, Benicio Del Toro as the Collector, Josh Brolin as Thanos, Chris Pratt as Peter Quill, and then there's a million other roles besides just those people. William Hurt makes an appearance, Danielle Guerrera as Okoye.
Right.
I could just keep going on. Winston Duke. So Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. The cast is absurd. This movie was the fastest movie ever to $1 billion grossing.
Wow.
Grossed $1.9 billion. You know, it's hard to always put the list together because some of these lists are adjusted for inflation, aren't. But it's currently, I think, about the fourth or fifth highest grossing movie of all time. It also had maybe the largest budget of any film ever, estimated $316 to $400 million it cost to make the film.
So,
which surpasses like Pirates of the Caribbean, Titanic in expensiveness.
So this is to date, right? So does Endgame break some of these records?
Some of them, yes.
Okay.
But the budgets are estimated. We don't know the exact number. And they were saying at one point that the entire Infinity War and Endgame was almost $1 billion to make.
Holy cow.
So this is like $315 to $400 million. The other one's probably about $400 million-ish.
Right.
So it's somewhere in the high hundreds of millions of dollars to make these movies.
Jeez.
Which is crazy. But you just heard the cast and you've seen the special effects.
Right.
So you understand why. Okay. So that is Avengers Infinity War. Are you ready to do this?
I've never been more ready for anything in my entire life.
I'll say one last thing about this intro once we hit play, and then I'll let you take over for a little bit, okay?
Right.
Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1, start the movie, baby. Start the movie. Start your engines. Think about where we're coming from with this movie in our rewatch, right? We just finished Thor Ragnarok. It's loud, it's colorful, it's funny, it's goofy.
Right.
And this intro to me is so genius. I think the entire purpose of the first 15 minutes of this movie is to say, we are shifting tones, people.
Oh, yeah.
To have a title card in almost complete silence with creepy music is so different from the Brian Tyler theme, I love.
Yep.
But I love this so much. The geniusness of making this first 10-minute scene so chilling, and that distress call is such a huge part of it.
And by the way, do you
to
know...
To me, is so fascinating. The distress call just helps so much.
Do you know who's making that Asgardian distress call?
I do, but to our audience, is Kenneth Branagh.
It's Kenneth Branagh who directed the first Thor film. Come on.
Yes, unbelievable. So I don't know how they decided to get him, but I love it.
It's so good. I was actually, when I was watching this the other day, I told Candace, this is my favorite intro to any Marvel movie, period.
Is it? Yeah. Really? Okay, so it's up there with me with the first Guardians, that intro.
Yeah.
For totally different reasons. But yes, how they change the tone. Like, but look at this very first scene, how like gory they almost make it.
Yeah.
Like, think about the difference of what I complained about with, you know, the lack of that in some of the films.
Right, right.
And then, dude, to throw in the chillingness of Ebony Maw's like dialogue, that's what I mean by they right away start adding this like destiny, right? Like he's like thanking them for their sacrifice.
Well, and even the way that they introduce him by seeing his feet step over corpses.
Right.
Like before we even see his face.
And in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the background, some of the other villains are still like stabbing guys through the chest with like a spear.
Yeah.
Still. The point of it is, this is going to be a totally different vibe. Like to me, it's almost like the directors, the Russo brothers, are saying, joke's over from Ragnarok. Kind of, you know?
Oh, no, totally. Oh, in that first line, I know what it's like to lose. Gosh.
Yes. So we finally get to our first like serious, long, in-depth Thanos dialogue, and it's as chilling and inspiring as you'd ever envision it to be.
Which, again...
And how easily he just picks up Thor like he's a rag doll.
You have to think, like, we've been building to this for so long, and I just know of so many franchises that have built towards something like this, and then it ultimately doesn't deliver. But the first time we really see Thanos, you're right, it delivers in every way it ever could. It's the opposite of a letdown.
Right. That's such a good point. Like this could have, again, another chance that Marvel had to have a massive failure.
Right.
I mean, this is an epic undertaking. And to have a villain that lives up, I mean, bro, I think in like 20 years, this is going to be, you're going to look back at like Darth Vader, the Joker, and Thanos is now going to be like mentioned in that conversation all-time iconic villains. And they pulled it off.
Yeah.
Again, establishing the brutality right away of picking up Thor like a ragdoll. How about the part where he's roasting his head with the Power Stone as if it's just like Thor, who we just saw have the hammer scene, right? Remember the God of Hammer scene? Now we're seeing him just getting tossed around like it doesn't matter.
Which is, that's why we were talking about in Ragnarok, you know, you had some issues with the power levels there with, you know, like how much can Thor really take? I like that we saw Thor take so much in Ragnarok because that just makes Thanos seem all the more terrifying now.
Yeah, no doubt. It's definitely easier to explain now, his power.
Like he did take Hulk jumping on him, you know, from like a mile up in the air almost, you know, and now it's like, he's just powerless.
When I rewatched this movie with Kyle Cousins, that's what I reminded him of is like, I think the entire point of this movie is to say Thanos is inevitable. And I think this is the perfect beginning to it. And obviously I'm spoiling things, but that's what makes to me the very end of Endgame, right? Fast forward 5 hours worth of viewing.
Right.
And the very point when Cap is like getting up, I think at that point as a viewer, you're supposed to feel like it's just hopeless. Like you literally can't beat this guy. Like they've tried everything. They've gone back in time. They throw the Hulk at him like we're watching right now.
Yep.
It just doesn't matter. And again, just to reiterate the tone shift, this Hulk scene of Hulk getting destroyed by Thanos, I know some Hulk people probably are sensitive about how he wasn't stronger there, but I think the point is just what we're talking about. Like you stand no chance against him, even with only one stone.
And I, whenever I say this is my favorite intro, I do mean the title card, but I mean all of this, like basically everything from now until we get to the Strange
Thing. Where it says Avengers Infinity War, actually.
Because it is all like, and I think my favorite part of it is that Hulk moment because we've been told the entire way through the MCU that the Hulk is just unstoppable. Like he is the like, if nothing else will work, we throw the Hulk in and we're fine because no one can beat him. And it's not just that Thanos beats him. It's that Thanos beats him casually.
Yes. Like he says, Ebony Maw says, let him have his fun. As if like he's just like, screwing around.
Like the way that you feel when Loki says, we have a Hulk. Like I remember in theaters being like, oh yes. Like this is about, yes. Thanos is about to get it. And then just the way you're crushed because it's just nothing. It's no challenge for him at all.
So fun Easter egg number one, when Loki says, we have a Hulk, I love that that's kind of a shout out to Tony in Avengers 1 saying,
oh, totally.
We have a Hulk,
totally.
To Loki. So he says the exact same thing to him. Loki then sees what that means because he gets the crap beat out of him in Avengers 1. So it's fun for him to now be like, well, we have a Hulk. Like he's confident it's going to work.
Right.
And then again, like you just said, totally reiterating, another Easter egg I love. Right. Sorry, if you're just joining us, this might be a little confusing because we're watching the movie. But another Easter egg I love is, and it's subtle, but when Heimdall says, let the dark magic flow through me one more time so that he can send Bruce all the way to Earth, that's another kind of shout out to what Loki says to Thor in the first Avengers. When Loki shows up on Earth, he says to Thor, how much dark magic did you have to conjure to get here?
Yeah.
But I just love that that's kind of another tie-in here, seeing that Heimdall can channel that power and use it to summon the Bifrost.
Yeah. I love in this scene in general, all of the shout-outs to Loki's role in the first Avengers film. Like, you know, he's got the Tesseract again. It's this conversation that he has with Thanos, you know, with like, I consider experience. It's like we see a little bit of that old Avengers Loki come back and it's fun.
Well, and, you know, because spoiler alert, we're not going to get him in this movie really. So this is kind of Loki's moment, this first, you know, 15 minutes or whatever. Going back to the Hulk thing, I have to just also say this movie to me is astonishing visually. Throughout the film, the visual effects to animate Thanos and how they did that to make him look so unbelievably believable is crazy. But how they specifically animated that Hulk fight, I think is important.
Yeah.
Because I think they tried to show you that even with no stones, just using like punching tactics, he's still incredibly fast, agile, and strong.
Yeah.
It's very clearly edited. A lot of the movie is Thanos like kind of walking slowly in charge, like a Darth Vader type. So I think that's important to show you. That's like Darth Vader in Rogue One when he shows up and like finally wields a lightsaber brutally. Right. This is our version of Thanos like, okay, he actually is like an all-world, all-galaxy fighter. So I just think it was probably very intentionally shot in that way.
I think so too. Obviously you have two CGI characters, but I feel like the choreography is almost reminiscent of Russo Brothers on like Winter Soldier.
Absolutely. Okay, so this Loki chokeout thing is about as brutal as the MCU ever gets, correct? I mean,
oh, totally. And again, this is all in the first like 15 minutes of this movie, Kyle.
I know. Oh, we already lose Heimdall, we lose Loki and half of Asgard.
Yep. And
the sound they put in for his neck cracking. My wife and I always comment how gross it is. And then he throws his body in front of Thor, just absolute brutality.
And of course, this is right after Thor and Loki have kind of finally made their own amends and become real brothers. And the only person really left for Thor, and now he is dead.
Dunzo. I want to point out the soundtrack here. I know we're going to do that a lot. But when I mentioned that Infinity War is one of my favorite soundtracks, it's partially for themes like we're hearing right now.
Yeah.
The bam, 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 bam.
Yep.
It's kind of almost a play off that Civil War feeling, but then mixed in with Thanos' boom, boom, boom theme thing. Boom, you know, is so cool. And I think we've said this so many times, but Alan Silvestri, man, I don't know if these movies would have been as successful without these scores.
Oh, yeah. And this Infinity theme is so epic. And it had to be, right? Like, it had to be on par with the scope of the story and the number of the characters that we have. And so, and he delivers again by having this huge anthem that's somehow not cheesy. It's emotional.
Yep. So non-comic me, Robbie, you'll love this story. When I first saw this movie, I didn't necessarily know how close to Earth this ship from Asgard was going to be. So when Heimdall throws Bruce toward Earth, was kind of hoping that they weren't going to do something like, oh, the ship was actually already right outside of Earth and Bruce just kind of like naturally falls to Earth.
Right.
That's what I was thinking they were going to do. And this, to me, as lame as that sounds, this little detail, is so much better.
Oh, yeah.
That basically Heimdall sends Bruce as a messenger intentionally.
Right.
Like all the way across galaxies still. They're not like right outside Earth. Right. They're not outside orbit. But to basically, I mean, who else to better portray the panic of Thanos coming than the Hulk to come down to Earth, who we haven't seen in forever.
Right.
And who else would Tony believe than Bruce saying he's coming as if like this is the most terrifying thing ever. It's just so fitting for it to be the Hulk and for him to be intentionally sent there, you know?
Right. Well, and it's also from the comics perspective, it's fun because that is a very clear shout out to Jim Starlin's Infinity Gauntlet comic that the Infinity War movie is based on.
Oh, really?
In the comic, it starts with not the Hulk, but the Silver Surfer crashes through that same window at the Sanctum Sanctorum. And Wong and Doctor Strange are having a conversation like in the movie. And he gets up and yells, "He's coming, Thanos is coming." And that's how the whole comic starts. So it's a fun shout out to the classic there as well.
Oh, it gives me so many chills when he actually says that. And then he goes, "Who?"
Yeah.
Bum, 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 ba-dum. Like, here we go. But yeah, I kind of love how little Earth is aware of him at this moment.
Yeah.
Like somebody like Doctor Strange wouldn't have a reason to know.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, commenting again on how this is kind of a standalone film to me in some way still, how they wanted to make it that way. Like, why else do the whole Wong Stone introduction again unless they were trying to, like, kind of catch some people up on what he's trying to do, you know? But it's such a fitting, kind of fun way to do it.
Oh, yeah. I also have to say, as we're seeing this scene now where Doctor Strange comes and finds Tony and Pepper in Central Park, and I have to give a shout-out to this line that I just love. Every time I watch it with my friend Emily, we laugh. When Tony says, "You giving out tickets or something?" And it's something about the way that he says it cracks me up every time. I love it.
What's your job other than making balloon animal?
I also love that whole Central Park scene. One thing that I really respect about what the Russo brothers do with their Avengers movies is they again really connect it back to some of the stuff that Whedon did, particularly in the first one. Making sure that they're tying up every thread. Like we've always said, like everything matters. And so I like that we're getting some more of this Pepper Tony stuff, very like classic Pepper Tony that we haven't gotten at all in a while. We got a bit of it in Homecoming, but
you know,
yeah, I mean, we're getting some kind of classic vintage MCU stuff here.
Yep. I want to reiterate that I also love the intro to this movie. I'm going to toss in, I'll say the first like 35 minutes of this movie or whatever are still some of my favorite bit ever. I still remember being in the theater, this whole scene we're watching of Doctor Strange and Tony interacting, the funny lightheartedness, but then how it gets interrupted and that sub rumbling in the theater. There's like a true dread I had watching this. So mission accomplished from them, what they were trying to do.
Yep.
I would say all the way up until when they actually get into space, like that's still, to me, the intro is still incredible. And you know that I love this. Like this kind of interaction right here that I'm watching with Tony, Doctor Strange, Bruce, who hasn't been around, and Wong, and then the reference to call him about Steve.
Yeah.
Like all of that is my dream. Like that, like this is peak MCU for me because I've always wanted to know what would an Iron Man who's such a believer in science say to a mystic arts guy?
Right.
You know, and they both have such strong egos. And we talked about how Doctor Strange and Tony are so similar in so many ways.
Right.
So it makes sense that they would like clash for leadership. And I love watching that on film.
Well, and you know, the one thing we've talked about maybe more than anything else is how much we love feeling the consequences of Civil War, but kind of everything that's happened in this last phase three. And what I love is that, you know, like phase one is bringing the Avengers together. Phase two is largely kind of seeing them become a team. And phase three is seeing them break apart. And what we're seeing in this conversation is not only the consequence of Civil War, but the consequence of Hulk being off planet for 2 years, of Thor being off planet. We're also going to see the consequences of Odin not reigning and not protecting the other realms, and Loki not taking his duty seriously, and what that means.
Yes.
It's like everything that, like, it's not like all these things just worked out. Like, we've now come to the point where all these things added up, and
yeah,
we're about to see what happens now.
Well, and kind of in a more subtle way, we see a little bit of the consequences of leaving the Power Stone on Xandar, that now it's gone and he has it. And we see a little bit of the consequences of giving a stone to the Collector. Like, it does tie in all of those things. And we're at that like breaking point in this movie.
It's these things that we almost took for granted. Like, oh, well, they wouldn't have left it on Xandar if that weren't really secure, right? But it's like, nope, it wasn't.
And I think it's also important to say that for a movie that is so serious, for them to inject little bits of humor is, to me, that Marvel formula that sets Marvel above a lot of other franchises. It's like, I feel the dread, I feel the cruelty, I feel stressed, it's so action-based, I'm so nervous, and yet they can still give me little bits of humor that don't feel like the characters aren't taking it seriously, right? They're still just being themselves while panicking about it.
Yeah.
And they just do it better.
This movie is the best at that, I think. I say that because Candace and I saw this together the first time. And, you know, I always say, like, sometimes these big event movies are the ones that she'll get bored by because there's so much going on and there's so much fighting. And she thought that this was one of the funniest Marvel movies she had seen. And I agree. Like, I think that it's up there for me with Guardians and Ragnarok. Not as funny as those, but I really like the way that Marcus and McFeely approached this.
Say it with me. Yeah, Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely. Yeah, I really love how they approach it, no doubt. So now we're getting to the scene where they're exiting the Sanctorum that I was referencing earlier. And again, I just love the dread is the word that they build up.
Oh.
Even with like how chaotic it is with the car and stuff, you know, crashing and all that. But yes, you're smiling because we get our Spider-Man introduction. Oh. Robbie, this is perfect, right? This is the most perfect way to get Spider-Man
it's
in this.
Perfect.
That he would be on a school bus
and
get
the spider sense. The Peter Tingle.
Yes. Yes, the Peter Tingle. And then how he says, Ned, distract him. We're going to die. It's a spaceship. We're all going to die. And that's his distraction.
And this Stan Lee cameo.
Yes. And then my wife and I, too, like, this is one of our favorite things, how he swings under the bridge and it starts playing that music.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just so fitting to have Spider-Man here. Yes.
Man.
It's New York. It's his town.
Oh.
And this is your boy. This is Spider-Man. Your boy.
This movie, Kyle. I've seen it now so many times, and this is rare, but there are certain movies where when they come out for me to watch whenever I want digitally or on Blu-ray or whatever, I feel like it's such a privilege that I can just watch this movie whenever
it's
I choose.
So true.
And this is
like
that
what time
movie
to be alive
me.
That we can just put it on.
Right?
We can just turn it on whenever we want. Who's stopping us? You're quarantined. Go home and watch it. So if you're just following along with us and you just joined us, we are 19 minutes and 37 seconds into Infinity War, and we are live commenting on it. It is just the scene where Ebony Maw is now speaking to Doctor Strange and Tony about how Earth is closed now, just to catch people up. I love that when Doctor Strange does his little magic there, he gives Tony a little wink, and Tony kind of does like this eye roll, like, okay, wow, he can do something, you know?
Also, you know,
that dynamic between the two of them is so fun for me.
This is kind of fitting for us to be watching now because Earth is sort of closed for business today.
It's so true. Okay, now let's talk about one of the coolest ever Tony Stark suit-up scenes. Agreed?
Oh, gosh.
With his new technology?
I love that. Apparently, there's some controversy around this suit and this scene.
Really?
In fan communities. I love it.
It's a little bit different looking. It's a little more like futuristic kind of CGI'd looking. But that's my point is like he's trying to evolve his suits all the time. Yeah. So I kind of like that it's a little bit different.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, and to the degree that people think that it's too CGI, like, I don't, that doesn't bother me because it's supposed to be nanotech. Like, it's supposed to look kind of fluid. So it shouldn't look too, like, too bulky or like metal per se, you know?
Right, right. Oh, here it is. It's happening right now for anyone who's getting a chance to watch this with us.
Oh, man.
And I have to also say that I just miss some of the best humor, I think, in the whole movie right there with Bruce when he's trying to suit up and he says, dude, you're embarrassing me in front of the wizards. That's one of my favorite lines in the whole movie because he's like about to show off Hulk, you know?
Yep.
Right. Banner, you want a piece? We're having a thing. That no time for a thing. That's the thing right there. It's nanotech. You like it? Yeah, so good.
Well, and that, like, that's the moment where you start to realize that the Hulk... something's
right
really happened with the Hulk, like that we're not going to get some epic rematch with the Hulk and Thanos like we were thinking we would.
Right. I think this might also be a good time to say, kind of regarding Doctor Strange, well, you know I like my power levels. Doctor right. Strange in his movie, though, because it's such an abstract film with an abstract villain,
really,
it's
really
a
good.
Little bit hard. It's a little hard for you to wrap your mind around how does Doctor Strange fit in like a real world, like New York battle,
right?
Because
right.
he's got the mirror dimension and all these weird powers.
Right.
And I would say like how the Russo brothers work him into the Avengers team is flawless to me.
Yeah.
It's fun to see his powers actually be beneficial in a real world fight next to Iron Man.
Yeah.
Right. And Spider-Man. It totally. Doesn't feel overpowered and it doesn't feel underpowered. It just works for me.
I think, I agree. I really, and especially with him being able to face off against Ebony Maw because they kind of have similar
exactly.
skill sets. The only thing that I always wonder here, and I still think they handle it really well, is why he doesn't make use of the Time Stone earlier. But, you know,
what would he do? Freeze it? Like pause it?
I guess so. But then whenever he does try to do it, you know, Ebony Maw sees it and stops it. So
right
I guess you could
yeah.
assume that would happen whenever he had tried to use it.
Every time that happens, I say to my wife, like, oh, he was so close. Like, I want to see yeah. him get it out, you know, and see if he can do something.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're kind of right. It kind of references that line when he says, Tony says, you might want to put it in your back pocket. He says, might want to use it.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, pull it out. But I don't, oh yeah, we're just watching it now. He catches him really fast.
Yeah.
He does try to use it pretty early in the fight.
Yeah, that's true.
Really, the first half of the fight is him kind of defending himself, you know, like they use the portals to
that's a good point.
Send the blades back and stuff like that. And that's like his first offensive attack, if you will.
That's true. And then basically from here on out, Ebony Maw is just going to have him almost incapacitated so he can't use it.
Yeah. Ebony Maw is an underrated character. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he's great.
I agree.
His dialogue makes everything a little more chilling to me, a little
yeah.
creepier, like, oh gosh, they're on a mission. Like when he's thanking people for death and how he talks
yeah.
and like even when he's on this scene, when he's talking to Tony and Doctor Strange, it's kind of creepy and chilling.
Yeah, oh, totally. I was so excited when I see him pop up again in Endgame. Because I just like that character a lot. I also love just this scene of Spider-Man swinging through the city. We just haven't really gotten a ton of that yet in the MCU. And it's so classic Spider-Man.
Yeah, and I kind of love the tiny little like shout out to Spider-Man lore when he's holding onto the pole with one arm and trying to hold the ship
yeah.
back with the other arm. And it's kind of like that stretching thing again.
Yep,
I just love
yep,
whenever
yep,
they
yep.
mix that in, you know. We had a listener bring up this next scene when Tony's taking off to catch up to the ship and he says, Friday, give me juice.
Uh-huh.
One of our listeners pointed out that's another way that Tony has worked to advance his suits, that learning from past failures, now this time he needs a little more juice to catch up. And
right.
it's kind of like an evolving of his suit. And I kind of love that idea
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I can see you watching.
Gosh.
We got to be careful not to just watch it because we love it
I
so
know,
much.
I know.
And we're just like watching it in the background. I love how they get Spider-Man into space.
Yep.
Feels very natural to me.
Yeah.
And how he shouldn't be there and he'll catch him with the suit and all that. That all works.
Yeah. And again, it's like, I feel like some of this, we just have these sort of, whether intentional or not, shout outs to classic, like the classic Iron Man or Avengers visuals of him shooting up into space. And, it, he's telling Spider-Man, oh, like you're running out of oxygen. Cause again, like he's been in that mode too.
Yes. That moment when Spider-Man catches the Iron Spider suit.
Yeah.
Got huge applause in my theater the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a big moment to see him finally be in that, you know?
Because we had it teased in Homecoming.
Yes, right. The ending of Spider-Man Homecoming, no doubt. This is a brutal phone call that Tony has to hang up with Pepper on.
Yep.
Kind of, again, these shout-outs to all these times that he loses connections with her. Like, remember when he tries to call her in Avengers 1 as he's bringing the missile up? Now here, and then eventually an Endgame, leaving messages, trying to connect with her, but kind of messing with that intergalactic communications, not as easy as one would think.
right.
Yeah. Tony has a lot of technology. He has not developed technology to phone call somebody from across the galaxy. 22 clicks away from Asgard, as the distress signal would say.
You know what I thought about after Ragnarok, though, is I do appreciate why the Asgardian ship was a bit closer to Earth than it would have just randomly been. Like, they were heading in that direction. So I kind of like
that.
Like Thanos, like, even though now he has a space stone, so it doesn't matter, but they were already kind of close to Earth. So it's not as though all of this is just like popping up all of a sudden.
Yeah. Every time we have a space movie that deals with how big space is in real life, you have to come up with some way to describe the travel.
Right.
I've loved how Marvel has done it by doing these like jump points is basically what they're saying, like folding of space, and there's these clicks. And that's specifically what I just made a joke about. In that distress call, he says we're 22 clicks outside of Asgard. So they always do try to like give you a reference point,
right?
Even though it's totally ambiguous.
Totally.
But I like that they're like trying to explain like that it does take the Guardians, who we're just now seeing here, which is so perfect, it takes them a little bit of physical time to get there.
Right.
Right? Because like there still is travel involved. Otherwise, you run the danger of like suspending all practical belief of it, you know?
Right. And what a great intro scene this is, bringing in Guardians for the first time not directed by James Gunn, which is kind of a crazy thing.
Yes.
But the tone is right on.
Yes, I was going to say, you don't miss it.
No.
How it says, it just says space. I love that.
Yes, I love it.
And then Rubber Band Man, such a great song to have there, and they're singing it, and life is good. It's such a perfect intro to them.
Yeah.
I will say that this interaction that we're just about to get between the Avengers and the Guardians was something that, before this movie came out, made me both simultaneously incredibly excited and incredibly anxious. Like, this is one of the times I was most excited for an interaction ever in the MCU. If you remember, before Infinity War, first of all, we got that epic trailer.
Right.
Remember how good that trailer
was? Oh my gosh, yeah.
But I said to all my friends, like, hundreds of times, I said, I love the Guardians so much, and you know that, and our listeners know that, but I kept saying, I don't want them to make this movie, like, too much of a joke.
Right.
I want them to take the movie seriously. And so I was equal parts excited, like, what does that look like to have the Guardians meet our Avengers?
Right.
And how will they handle it? And I'll just say, in hindsight now, it's pretty flawless. There's funny parts, but I don't feel like it ever pulls me out of like, oh, they don't get it.
Yeah.
Partially because Gamora gets it from the beginning.
Totally.
You know, so she kind of reins us back in.
And I mean, this scene is huge because, I mean, yes, we've had Doctor Strange now meet up with the Avengers, but that's not as wild as introducing this kind of other universe that hasn't connected at all so far to Guardians movies, to one of our original Avengers. I was like, this was the moment in the trailer, the "Who are you guys?" line that, I was so excited for this scene. And again, it delivers, Kyle.
It delivers. That should be this movie's hashtag. It delivers. It's crazy when you think about, like we talked about, we haven't seen these Guardians since Guardians 2. It feels like that was a long time ago. And if you watch them back to back, it's even longer ago.
Yeah. And it's supposed to feel like it was a long time ago, according to James Gunn. You know, I think it's supposed to have been
out there doing stuff.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to have been 4 years.
Yeah. Wow. It feels like a long time. This scene of Thor meeting the Guardians is such comedic gold to me. I feel like, and I don't know this as a fact, but I feel like if I'm Kevin Feige and I'm watching this, this is what had to have inspired, we need these characters to be involved more. Because breaking news, as you may have heard, audience, the Guardians of the Galaxy are going to be in Thor, Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
And apparently, like, not just make a cameo, they're going to, like, be in it.
Love
and
that.
There's scenes like this where you had to have, you have to think they maybe didn't plan that. They saw this evolve and thought that was such good chemistry. That's what I like to believe. That they're like, we need to keep these guys involved because it's just so funny to see them, like specifically Chris Pratt and Chris Hemsworth's, you know, performance here. All the jokes about the fat jokes and then his muscle jokes and all that stuff is so good.
Yeah.
Are you mocking me?
Well, we've talked before about how Marcus and McFeely drafted all these alternate versions of Infinity War. I think we've talked about that, where they just had walls full of like, well, could these characters go together? Or these characters, and basically wound up with the ones that they thought bore the most fruit, the relationships. And I kind of think you're right. I think especially once we saw it on screen, I have to think that Feige and Taika, that they all just couldn't pass up on the opportunity to get more of these kind of interactions.
Yeah. One thing I was keeping an eye to when I rewatch this movie, and I want you to be keeping an eye on right now. In our Guardians episode, you brought up a question to Kyle and I asking us, do you feel like some of the Han Solo, Peter Quill thing is a little bit lost in Infinity War and Endgame?
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe a little bit, but I just don't think it's quite as much as you were saying, or maybe you believe. Like in this scene, for example, it's still kind of funny to me that Chris Pratt, or Peter Quill, I mean, feels like he needs to rise to the challenge of Thor threatening his like masculinity.
Right.
That still feels like it's in character to me. Not overly goofy. It's like he's trying to still be the cool one in the ship. I don't know. I just, I see it a little bit because like later on there's some jokes that are just straight goofy, but I don't feel it as much as you do, I think.
I will say I didn't feel it as much as I had remembered on this last rewatch. I do still think, though, that Star-Lord is never as cool as he is in Guardians Volume 1.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
I mean, and you know, cool. And I mean he's cool like a, in a very quote, particular
like,
quote, unquote,
way. A cool guy, yeah. Yeah, he's like the cool guy in Guardians 1.
Yeah.
For sure.
He's still
but
funny.
But a little bit gets goofier in Guardians 2 even, I would argue. Maybe a little bit.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I would say I think that's what I was getting at in that Guardians episode is I felt like later iterations of him, it seems he gets progressively goofier, but not in a way that I think is some big negative. I just was pointing out, I think at the time I saw it as a negative. Now I don't. I think it's just a bit of a change. And I think that kind of makes sense. He's been with this group for years now instead of being a loner or being with the Ravagers. Like, I think it would make sense that his guard's down some. But, and I think it just makes more fun. I mean, again, we've talked about this ad nauseum. I don't want these characters to stay the same.
Yeah, right. So you're okay with it getting a little bit different.
I am, yeah.
They need to evolve a little bit.
And I think that we'll see him evolve again further in the next Guardians film because of everything that's happened in Infinity War and Endgame. Yeah, right.
I think this is a good point to also say another thing this movie does well to me is think about how hard the task would have been to have a movie like this with the 25 main characters, if they had not been split up, I'm just saying on a practical level, I think it would have been really, really hard to get good chemistry and a good vibe if all 25 or whatever, I'm saying that number hypothetically, were together in one room talking. Right. And Stephen McFeely actually referenced that in the commentary, that to make this feel better, they had to split them up into teams and then watch them all kind of play it out together.
Right.
In their individual teams. Because you really, this movie, you kind of get like an Earth Wakanda team.
Uh-huh.
You get this like Guardians team. And then even from there, they split up.
Right.
And then you kind of get like the Guardians go to the Titan team, if you will.
Yeah.
But I think that's really the only way they could kind of balance all the personalities. And again, in Endgame, it's kind of the same way until the very last scene.
It's true. Yeah.
You know, we rarely get to see like all 20 characters like in one room going together, you know?
Yeah. Gosh.
Which maybe that makes you a little bummed out, but.
No, I mean, one of the things that I loved so much about Infinity War, and it's different from Endgame in the way they do both have those individual teams, like you're saying, but I remember in the theater, Infinity War has this amazing way of, you're watching these characters, you're so into it, and then as soon as you start to think like, wait, but where is it, like cuts to that character. It's reading my mind all the time, where it's like, wait, but what's going on with Doctor? Oh, wait, there's Doctor Strange. Or like this, it's like you're wondering.
Yeah.
Like I love this Vision and Scarlet Witch scene. And I love that it's like every new cut to a different group of characters in Infinity War just revs me up more and more, because it's just expanding and expanding. And it's like any questions, I'm like, wait, what's going on? And you even get some shout outs about Clint and Ant-Man, if you're wondering where they are here in a second. It's just like,
yes,
this movie is so big. You're right. There are all these movies happening within it, but they're all so interesting to me.
I know. And I just got to also say, I think these actors and actresses are delivering like A tight performances. Like even this scene right here could be a very like lost scene, but I totally feel the chemistry between Wanda and Vision here, and the struggle to leave or not leave. And then how they tie in that Wanda sees Tony on the news and then they both still feel a tie to Stark. Like they can't just leave if that's the case. Like, I don't know. Like this is a scene that could be forgettable, but nothing feels out of place here.
No. And I love that we've really only had one movie of this relationship developing, right? Civil War.
Yeah, right.
But again, kudos to Marcus and McFeely and the Russo brothers, because I feel this relationship here based on just the time that we've gotten with those characters. And I love that's also paying homage to the comics.
Absolutely. We are now 38 minutes into Infinity War, if you're just listening, if you want to fast forward to where you're at, if you're watching the movie. This scene where Vision gets stabbed literally is jarring to me all the time. Like it's jumpy. It's like one of the only times in the MCU there's a jumpy scene. It scares me for a second.
And you hate it because we've seen Vision as
his power,
as another one of our ultimate weapons, right? Like he's like Hulk. Like he's like, oh, well, we've got Vision. You know, he's indestructible. And immediately he's out of the game.
Isn't that so fascinating that you would say to yourself, if this was real life, you would say, okay, but Earth's okay because they have Vision, they have Thor, and they have Hulk. Like, if it's going to come down to just straight power, we got all three of them. And what do? They pretty much incapacitate all three of them right off the bat. They take our three strongest and go, nope, it's not going to work, you know? I think it actually makes the movie a little more believable because...
Totally.
That's like what... Like, whenever you're asking yourself, like, why isn't Vision ever himself? I think it's explained by him getting stabbed right here. And he can never really get back to his normal self. And that's how it makes them being as vulnerable as they are more believable.
Well, and to the people that would say, like, oh, well, that's convenient that, you know, you're taking all of the overpowered characters off the board. I think
that's
you have
the point.
To think that
they
Thanos,
have the stones, though.
Thanos has been doing recon. Like, Thanos knows what he's doing. He sends him in with that weapon that he knows will incapacitate Vision. He knows he needs to take out the Hulk. He knows he needs to take out Thor. Like, it's not like any of this is by accident.
Right.
Or by coincidence.
Well, and Vision has the stone. And again, Thanos is not out just to kill everybody, just to kill everybody at this point. He just wants his destiny. Right. He wants the stone. So it makes sense to me that he's like, hey, we know where he is. Go get the stone from him. I don't need to send a whole army. Just go get it from the one guy with this weapon and come back.
Right.
Okay, here we go, Robbie. Here we go.
Okay,
so
you
for
know
listeners
this is,
that are
know,
out there, we are just about to see the introduction of Robbie's Steve Rogers. And
this,
I want to talk
about this moment for me.
This moment is unbelievable. I want to talk about this moment in a bigger picture way for a second, Rob, because I know the writers of this movie debated how they would bring Captain America in. Have you read this? A lot.
No.
So like where he'd come in the movie, because we're 40 minutes in, he's still not in the movie. Captain America.
Right.
Well, by the way, it's not Captain America, as I would say. It's Steve Rogers at this point. Or Nomad. Yeah. You know, Nomadic Steve Rogers.
And here it is.
It is.
Here
it He's coming in, so Robbie's going to lose it. But they debated forever where to bring him in. I don't know if you know this. There was a version of the script, Robbie, where he first made his entrance at the end of Wakanda Saving Vision. That would have there was a version of the script where that was the first time we saw him.
Wow.
But they felt like, obviously, we can't wait.
That would have been epic.
It would have been so epic. That's what they thought. But they also thought, we can't go 2 hours into the movie without showing Steve Rogers. So there was just a big debate on, how do we make his reveal super awesome without it being so late? And for our audience out there, I'm FaceTiming with Robbie, and I could just see him like enthralled with the TV right now. I've lost him. He's gone. He's out.
That moment, I just feel, I feel so much. Because again, it's just Steve Rogers is the guy. He's always going to do whatever it takes to save people and to do the right thing. And so even though Vision, who fought against him in the Civil War, is the one that's in danger, here comes Steve Rogers, and he's, oh gosh. And I and just the moment when you see the silhouette and that da-na-na, 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 oh.
Yes. Again, to see these people in different teams, I think it's fun to see this little team, and I kind of hope I get a little flash of this in Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Because
this feels
that.
A little like, you know, like the Secret Avengers type team. It's just kind of a fun little. I like to envision them off doing like spy things while this is all going on. Right. You know,
I know I would have loved, and who knows, maybe one day I would love just a Secret Avengers movie. Obviously, it would be hard because, you know, you have to figure out the stakes and all of that stuff and where it fits in. But it's like, I love this dynamic. I love the character designs. I love the blonde Black Widow and the bearded Cap.
So for me, I love bearded Cap. see, you copied my beard. I love that Captain America right there says, we should go home. And home meaning the Avengers facility. To me, as like a Team Iron Man guy, that's so fulfilling for him to be like, yes, come home, please. Just come home to me, you know? Remember when I told you in Civil War that Captain America as a character changes, that he kind of no longer becomes Captain America? Don't you notice it on this viewing? Like, even that dialogue, he hardly talks. He's standing there with his beard, like not saying anything, like he's almost like all wise or jaded or something. And they say things like, where to? And all he says is home. Like, he doesn't even like elaborate. It's not like it's just such a different thing, such a far cry from like the giddy, naive version of Captain America in Captain America First Avenger.
Oh, totally. Totally.
So again, another character that's just evolved like crazy.
Yeah. I love that. This is what I mean when I say just, I'm sure that it had to be so difficult to figure out how to do all these transitions and how to make the story flow well. And it's such a strange thing to transition from that Cap scene there in Scotland to now this flashback of Gamora. But again, it is perfect.
Yeah, why does it never feel out of place? It just doesn't ever. Something about it.
Like you don't know what's going on for a while, and then kind of by the time you do, you're so enthralled. And like, to your point, this is a very, like, this is such a complicated scene because Thanos is literally wiping out half of her planet in front of her, including her parents.
Chills.
But he's also weirdly endearing. You're also watching him kind of take care of her.
Yes.
And you sort of like him.
You get one shot right here where he's got his arm around her, but in the background is like 1,000 dead bodies on the left side, mangled.
Yeah. And he's like shielding her face so she can't see.
Yeah. And it's like, it's just so, I love the conflict. I don't know what it is. I just feel this like weird conflict about him and I'm just into it. It's hard to describe.
Yeah.
I think one way they make it flow so well is kind of what you were saying. Like, that was a perfect example of, again, you as a viewer are kind of wondering, I wonder why Gamora is so, why she reacted so weird to Thor saying, no one knows where the Soul Stone is. Or like you don't know her background fully with Thanos. So right when you start thinking about that, cut to that. Or you're thinking about, where's Vision?
Right.
Cut to that. Where is Tony right now? Cut to that. Like, I'm not quite thinking to myself, what's happened to Doctor Strange and Tony yet? But in about 5 minutes, I'll start thinking to myself, I need to see them again. And then we get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I'm sure that a large part of that came from the editing process, as far as like just constantly combing over and thinking to myself, what would a viewer be wanting here?
Oh, totally. You know? Totally. And that's why I just think this movie is uniquely impressive in that way among any movie I've ever seen, not just MCU movies. Like, the juggling that is done and the fact that it's done so well is just bananas to me.
Yep. Spoiler alert, this movie would be in my top 10 favorite movies of all time. Not MCU. This would be in my just favorite movies I've ever watched. So
yeah. Oh, same.
This scene where we're just now getting to, 45 minutes in the movie, is Gamora talking to Peter Quill, and she's asking Peter if he would be willing to kill her if need be. And again, this is such a subtle thing, but this is what I mean by they handled it perfectly, right? Like, here's an example of Peter Quill comes in and he's joking, right? Like the grenades, he's not getting the seriousness of the moment. And that was my fear before the movie. But what this movie does so well is, like, Gamora almost represents that fear of mine. And she says, like, stop, and puts her finger on his lips, like saying, like, stop joking. Like, I'm not kidding.
Right.
And she kind of has like this eye roll, like, please. I'm trying to say something serious. And that's how I felt. And that's what I love, is like they're addressing like kind of how I don't want him to not take it seriously. You then get a really heartfelt moment because of it. And then where Marvel's perfect is right after the heartfelt moment, they give us this hilarious Drax moment.
About, one of my favorite Drax moments.
About standing so incredibly still. And that's what I mean, is like, in what? In a 3-minute scene, I just got everything, right?
Yeah.
For me.
Which, my favorite line from that exchange is not the I'm sure you can't see me. It's always been, how long have you been there?
Exactly.
An hour.
Yeah, exactly. An just so hour? Casually, yeah. He just so casually says an hour. Yeah. Like, an hour. Yeah. For those of you who haven't seen this, there's some really funny online memes of, like, it will say, in this picture is, and it will show a picture of this person, and it'll say Drax, because he's standing so still, he's invisible, you know? So it'll be a picture of, like, one person. And like, oh, look, also Ant-Man and Drax are in this scene.
Right.
Just some fun stuff like that. But we are now getting to what we think is our first look at the Collector. Spoiler alert, it's not going to be. And how Thanos is going to twist reality.
Back to nowhere from Guardians 1.
Yeah, and what I love about this, Robbie, again, is that I don't just see that, hey, all the stones are powerful. I love seeing that the stones have abilities.
Yeah.
So for me, this is fun to see him actually use the red reality stone to twist reality versus just saying, hey, he has stones, so he must be really strong. I don't know. I just absolutely love that kind of detail.
Totally. Well, and it's fun because with the reality stone, for instance, we only have seen that in the context of Thor: The Dark World, Thor 2 shout out. And there we really just saw it operating like not all that differently from the Power Stone. But I think what's cool is the way that can be explained is just the way that the Space Stone doesn't necessarily behave the exact same way that Tesseract did. I think the stones behave different when they're in those kind of containment units. Like, those containment units change what they do and how they work. And I think that's why the ether is not the same thing as the reality stone. Like, the ether was a container for the reality stone. But now that we're seeing Thanos actually wield the raw stone, it's a different thing. It's him straight up controlling the nature of reality.
Do you think that's a slight retconning on our part? Now, I love that. I love what you just said, and that's a perfect way to think of it. But do you think it was just a mistake that they didn't know the reality stone would be like that?
I think it is a retcon. But I think that
maybe a mistake is a strong word.
But I think we do get some language, and I'll have to look at where that is. It might be some stuff from Feige himself, but where they do talk about the difference between the stones and the kind of containers they're in, like why the Space Stone is within the Tesseract rather than just being loose as a stone, and the same with the Reality Stone.
Okay, yeah, I think that's fair. I like that. I think we're about to get some of my favorite Zoe Saldana and Chris Pratt acting ever in this upcoming scene where Gamora is being held by Thanos and she's asking Peter Quill to kill him, to kill her. Sorry, to kill her, not Thanos. This is some of my favorite acting from them. Again, I just, for some reason, feel this movie from these performances more than so many others.
Well, even this Thanos quote-unquote death scene is very emotional.
Yeah, and she's like sad about it, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, you're just so conflicted with this character.
Yeah.
Also, there's one other shout-out I have to give that's necessary. Josh freaking Brolin. I don't talk about him enough in this. First of all, his voice could not be any better for this character. I think it's so cool, the deep. Yeah, it's awesome to me. But again, this is good acting. This is A-list type acting, you know?
Yep. You're right. And that can go...
Not that I have to defend that, but that's just the beauty of this versus like...
But it can get lost, especially behind the CGI. It can get lost, and I think it's important to call it out.
Yeah. You know, someone was asking me the other day about the difference between like these movies and like some shows that are really well done. And I think that sometimes the budget that is allowed to be this big allows for these type of A-list actors and these kinds of performances. And I think it's easy to take it for granted when there's CGI and there's blowing up, but you forget that these people are like acting their hearts out and I'm feeling it, you know?
Right.
Even though it's about a guy holding a magical stone and shooting guns at him and turning him into spirally people. I get it's ridiculous, but I feel it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But again, that's another fun shout out to the comics, by the way, those visuals.
Really?
Yeah, Thanos uses the stones to do that. It's kind of this, that there are all these panels showing just all the wacky things he can do.
Huh. That's kind of cool. So right there, when Peter Quill walks into Thanos, he calls him Grimace. Did you catch that?
Uh-huh.
That's a 1970s and 1980s reference. There was a McDonald's advertisement of a character of that exact same name.
The big purple guy.
Yeah. But I just think that's kind of fun because, again, he hasn't been around for any recent pop culture references, you know?
Oh, that's true.
So it's kind of a cool little shout out. I love the play with that he's missed a lot of the 90s and 2000s, you know, on Earth at least.
I also love, in terms of this movie knowing what we're thinking, I love that Chris Pratt just straight up says he has a nutsack of a chin, because we're all thinking it.
We are. It's like a meta joke, kind of.
Right.
Again, but to me, that's a little bit of still the Han Solo thing. That he has jokes like that to me, you know, still kind of the cool guy.
And this scene is a classic, I would say, kind of a classic Star-Lord scene.
Okay, yeah, he's still got this is like a Guardians 1 feel a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when Howie walks out there, the first thing he says in this dire moment is how I told you to go left. That's kind of classic Guardians 1. Like,
Yeah.
But again, that the tear down his cheek there, like in his eyes, is so good.
Mm. Man.
So, okay, to everyone just, again, tuning in, this has been fun for Robbie and I. We are now 52 minutes into Avengers Infinity War, one of Robbie and I's favorite movies of all time. And we are giving you our live commentary. So if you're just catching up, you're welcome to fast forward to 54:09 and keep watching with us if you want. Captain America is just now going home, which I commented on. I freaking love. What do you make of this Rhodey conversation about the Accords? Like, do you think he regrets signing them now or has mixed feelings? Or how do you feel like he feels about that?
I think he does. I think he regrets it a little bit. I mean, I know at the end of Civil War, we had a conversation between him and Tony where he says, you know, I think that I did the right thing. It sucks that I paid for it, but I think it was the right thing. I think here...
Can I tell you what I love about that, though?
Yeah.
I think that by them giving us that Accord shout-out, it's like two-part. It's simultaneously like referencing that the Accords is what split them up, and that's why they're not there. But also, the whole point of the Accords is kind of a joke when something this serious is happening. Right? Like, that was the whole point of Captain America is like... what point is having the Accords if we're literally under attack from a galactic empire?
Right.
Like I'm not going to sit around and discuss if you need us to fight, you know? So I kind of think it's a fun little shout out that he's like, yeah, I signed him, but now I don't give a crap. I'm not going to arrest Captain America that he's here, because that's what Ross says to him, arrest these men. And it's like,
which is ridiculous.
Exactly. But that's my whole point with the whole thing. And that's why I think makes Civil War so beautiful, kind of, is that it tears them apart, but it's also simultaneously about something that could easily be trumped if something worse showed up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things in the scene that I want to hit briefly. One, just to your point about Captain America now being, you know, kind of gone and us having Steve Rogers, that interaction with Ross is, it's totally different than what we've seen before.
Can you ever imagine Captain America saying what he said? I can't.
No. It's two, one thing that I really love that I haven't thought about before is how faithful the MCU has been to Rhodey as a military figure all the way through. Like, right, like that's how we first meet him in the first Iron Man film. And all of that leads up to now when he's like, well, that's a court-martial.
Yes. Yes.
I just think it's cool that we've kept that thread the whole way, and that now it's like this guy that we met in the military is now finally, like, he's come to the end of that road.
Yes, he's kind of less of a superhero. He's less of an Avenger, and he's a little more of like the military presence, like the voice. That's why he's doing that video chat there.
Right. But now this is going to be a big shift for him, because now he's basically, he is kind of moving more into the Avenger world.
Right, but also that probably leans into why he did sign the Accords in the first place.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Because he's coming from a military, like, government perspective.
Right. And then, of course, we have this little Hulk Natasha moment, or Banner Natasha moment. And I know there's a lot of debate about whether or not there should have been more.
Yes, my wife wants more so bad. She loves this movie with all her heart, and that's the only thing that kills her, is that there wasn't more.
Yeah.
I love that there is a pause at least, and he says, like, Nat, as if, like, acknowledging. But he's been gone. He's been gone for years.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I wanted more and was expecting more, but I think in hindsight, like, we do have this very, I mean, you know, we get the little joke about, like, well, this is awkward. Like, we all know what's going on. It's not like they dropped the storyline. But you're right, like, if you really think about it, the relationship that we saw develop,
it never got to blossom. It never got to blossom,
and we even got that amazing line in Age of Ultron where it's like, did we miss our window? And yeah, they did, because he leaves and things are never the same again, because Hulk's never going to be the same and he's going to be stuck off planet and Natasha's going through what she's going through with the Accords. And then they're not going to come back together in the middle of a Thanos invasion and suddenly start making out. Just they're different people now. They've changed. And so I feel like it's this kind of acknowledgement. And then I think that plays into the reaction we get from Bruce in Endgame when we lose Natasha.
Well, and I think my wife's complaint is not so much that she wants to see them run in there and make out. It's more that they didn't get a chance to develop more. It's more of a longing of what could have been.
Not that
like the acting or the scene is out of place. It's just that, like, it's a bummer they didn't get more of a relationship.
No, totally. But I think it's one of those.
It's practical why they didn't.
And it's one of those tragedies that I appreciate them making us sit with. This idea that, like, it could have been. And I mean, some people like the relationship, some people don't. I like the relationship. I would have liked to see them be happy together. And I think it makes it all the more tragic as a whole that they can't.
That is such a good word, because that should be my answer to so many people. Like, when the fan that wrote us that said he was kind of bothered that Bucky isn't stronger, or like that Hulk doesn't get the Hulk smash. My point is, like, that is a tragedy.
Right.
But that's the point. You're supposed to sit with the discomfort. And I think that's what I like. Which, again, it bothers me, if that makes sense. Like, I also miss it, but I think I'm supposed to sit with my discomfortable feelings, like Christopher Nolan makes me do. You know, like, that's what I'm sitting with. I have to do that. Okay. We just missed a scene that I have to still talk about. We're one hour in exactly, 60 minutes. Again, speaking of what you just said, how amazing is it that right there, again, you're just starting to think, what about Wakanda and Black Panther? And then he says, Captain America says, well, I think I know a guy. And it goes, the drum start from Ludwig's score.
Yes.
And then to just bring in the actual Wakanda theme again. Right?
Yes.
Right. And like, it's just in those moments, I'm just so struck by how we praise Endgame and Infinity War for doing this. It's like, it's tying up these massive individual franchises. It's bringing them together, and yet it's still simultaneously pushing us forward. So like, you give us the shout outs of like the Wakanda theme and the drums coming, and you know what's about to happen, and it makes you so excited. And then also like, you're still getting moved forward though, right? So it's just, and I also wanted to say, again, I was not as high on Black Panther the movie. We've talked about that.
Sure.
But what did I say in that episode? I freaking love T'Challa so much in all these other roles. So like, this is a perfect example. When those drums start, that's like a top 10 chills moment for me in this movie.
Yeah.
For real. Like when he says, I know a guy, that gets me so excited. So I don't know what it is. It's not just the movie. It's, but as a character, I'm all in on him.
Well, and one interesting thing that I've read from the Russos and Feige and Marcus and McFeely is like, they were a little nervous about how much they were betting on Wakanda for this movie, because you have to think like, they were filming this before Black Panther had even been released. And obviously Black Panther was a massive, massive success and a huge cultural moment, but they didn't know
at the time
if it would work at all. And so if Black Panther had not worked well with audiences, and then it was such a big part of this big Avengers movie, that could have, again, that was a risk. It could have gone poorly.
Yep. But another detail that's crazy with that is like, they were also filming a lot of Black Panther in Atlanta. So there was like physical, just like they were walking over to a different studio in their Black Panther like outfits, and they just like walk over to shoot some Infinity War scenes. That, to me, the practical nature of that is just crazy.
Right.
Like,
that
they don't
crazy.
Know how successful it's going to be. So it's like the Imbombe, that stuff was like the Black Panther actors took that with them from the Black Panther movie and kind of like suggested they could do that in the Infinity War thing. And again, this is before the Infinity War, like Russo brother directors, before they knew this would be successful, but they heard the chant and they said they got chills. So they're like, we should do that kind of stuff, you know? And obviously it's one of the coolest moments in the whole thing.
Yeah.
But like, just again, the practical nature of how risky that would have been is so true.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's crazy because they didn't know. We are now at the scene where Tony and Doctor Strange and Spider-Man just eliminate Ebony Maw. Some of my friends were shocked at how quickly he died and were a little bummed. I kind of loved it because, again, we have so many pieces that have to move in this movie, so many, that I'm not going to draw this out. I kind of like it. I also like that when it's a dope scene of Doctor Strange being tortured, Tony gets full suited up and like does his sound of like loading.
Yeah.
You know? But then Ebony Maw says like, your powers are inconsequential to mine. And he kind of like agrees. Tony's kind of like, But the kids see more movies. That's a fun little bit.
Yeah. It is fun. And I
How fun are all those pop culture references? I mean,
it's
scale
so
of 10, 1 to 10, they're like an 11 for me.
I also love that Stephen Strange is being tortured by devices that were designed for microsurgery.
Oh my gosh, I just got chills. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. But of all people to be tortured,
the master surgeon.
Yeah, the master surgeon is being tortured by a medical device. That's amazing. This interaction here of them arguing is amazing. And I love that Tony shows a little vulnerability when he says, I don't know what to do, like panicking. But he's not wrong necessarily to say, I don't know that going back to Earth is the right thing right now. I don't think he's wrong there.
And just the line, he's been in my head for 6 years. Gosh, like that gives me chills.
That reminds me of Age of Ultron and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Tony's been preparing for this. This is Tony's worst nightmare playing out in front of him. This is it.
Yep.
Like, that's why I think when at the very beginning, when Bruce shows up, Tony says one line. What does he say? He says, this is it. That's what he says. You notice that in the very beginning of the sentence?
Yeah.
Because this is his nightmare. It's happening. He's been thinking about this for a long time.
And you know what I always notice is like, given what we've talked about with Tony, you know, we've talked about Iron Man 3 and Age of Ultron and kind of this move towards him becoming more paranoid. And even in Civil War, you know, this idea that he's just, he can't stop thinking about this. I love that in Infinity War, despite the weight of all of that, you can tell he's still trying to kind of keep the same happy-go-lucky, funny sort of like, not a care in the world, Tony, while he's fighting. You know, like, we're not going to see that in Endgame. It's like, but he's trying to kind of bring the classic Iron Man approach to this situation until the very end of Infinity War, when he just breaks, when he just can't be kind of Tony has an answer for everything Stark anymore.
Yep.
But I'm always struck by, even though the consequences are so dire through this whole film, but he still is like kind of putting on a face that he's got it under control.
But that's why that gives me so many chills thinking about one of our favorite scenes in Endgame.
In Endgame, exactly.
Because exactly. He hits his breaking point. Yeah. Like his Iron Man, he doesn't have an answer anymore. That's what he says. We lost. There's no fight. There's no point. It's over. We lost. I tried to warn us. What else do you want me to do? I'm going to go live my life now. I tried. He literally quits. Because it just doesn't work anymore. And again, I feel for him because he's afraid of this happening for a long time. And here it is.
Gosh.
It's happening.
It's happening. So, but yeah, and he's still trying to, he's trying his best here. He's trying to put on the superhero face.
Oh. Okay, so we are going to end this part one at an hour 15, which is exactly halfway. So we're almost there. So a couple closing thoughts I want to say. This is my, like I said, one of my top 10 movies ever, not just in the MCU. If I had to point at one part that feels a little slow, it's this scene here where Gamora's talking to Thanos and then going and the Nebula torture stuff. I still love it all. But if I was to downgrade the movie for anything, I would say maybe right here it drags a touch. But I'd also get some really good development where she's arguing with
say.
Him.
I feel like the Thanos fan in you would have to have this scene because it gives us so much backstory on him and humanizes him so much. And then, of course, he throws some of that away as soon as we go and see him torturing Nebula.
I was just feeling a pressure to not be 100% fanboy, but yeah, I'm 100% fanboy. If I had to say something, it was that. But other than that, no, I still love it. It's perfect. Who am I kidding?
No, I would argue, and we can talk about this at the time, I feel that way about certain Gamora Nebula scenes in Endgame, but I don't feel that way about these scenes in Infinity War.
Mm.
And we'll obviously talk about that at the time, but I don't know if that resonates with you at all.
I've never felt Gamora and Nebula as strongly as some people do, and maybe as strongly as I think they want me to.
Right.
But I've told you this before in past episodes, I've been hesitant to say that a lot because, like, my wife, for example, and some other people I know really feel it.
Right.
My wife has a twin sister, though, and so, you can see how it would hit her differently than me, you know?
Right.
It's not that I don't like both characters. I like both characters, and I feel Gamora's tension with Quill more.
Totally.
But yeah, I've never like this torture scene here is brutal. I've never felt 100% horribly for Nebula.
Yeah.
Like I would if it was like somebody else, or maybe even if it was reversed, if Gamora was being tortured, right? Then it would kill me.
Although the shot where that you first walk in and it looks like she's whole and then the camera angle swaps and you see that she's all is a really cool shot.
Yes. Yes. I will say though, this goes a long ways to set up some of the Endgame stuff between them because.
Totally. Totally.
Like how they don't know each other yet, that they're going to like become friends and Nebula says like we do. It does help.
Right.
It does help solidify that she sticks up for her here.
That's right. That's right. Because, because Nebula.
Nebula knows, I'm saying. The future Nebula has gone through it all, but the past Nebula has not yet.
Yeah, that's a really, that's a good point. It's easy to forget sometimes which version of Nebula and Gamora have experienced what at that point.
That's fair. this is the subtlest detail that I don't know if anyone cares about. At 109.50, there is this weird melody that I've always loved in the music. Boo-dum, boo-dum. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And it's just like one string player. It's like a celloist or something. Uh-huh. And that's it. And I've always loved it for some reason. It stands out so much because he goes, "You're strong, boo-dum, me."
Yes, 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 yes.
Boo-dum, me. You know, it's cool. It's like, yeah, it's like he's this, the orchestra's like singing with Thanos, kind of.
Yeah.
It makes it kind of like a space opera a little bit for a second. I don't know. I love it. And this is going to be our introduction into the Soul Stone, dude.
That's
which
true.
Is obviously going to play such a massive, massive role. And it's the last stone, yeah, that's revealed.
That's been the big question mark for the longest time.
Yep. Yep. I do love the, how they set the Soul Stone apart the whole time. Not only have we, yeah, not seen it, but then instead of just saying, hey, it's another one that's on another planet, the way they explain that we haven't seen it is because it's so rare and it sets itself apart from the other stones.
Right. Right.
And this is why I kind of wanted to pause this episode here, because we are getting to what is this, maybe peak Thor? Are we about to get peak, yep, Thor here? At, yep, 1 hour and 11 minutes, we're going to get the scene where Thor and Rocket have the conversation about what he's lost. And if you get a chance, please go fast forward to this scene, rewind to this scene, even if you've seen this movie, and just watch, yep, Hemsworth's performance here. In the audio commentary, the writers and the directors talk about how much even Hemsworth's performance stood out to them.
Hmm.
That like, even amongst all these people, he was like really killing it.
Yeah.
And I love seeing this vulnerability from him here. And it's such a perfect person for him to be talking to in Rocket. Like just the irony,
right,
there. And,
right,
we set up some of that relationship in Guardians 2, how we talked about some of Rocket's development,
right,
you know,
right,
with Yondu and all that. But when Thor actually starts recounting what he's lost, there's so much work done here. Not only is his performance good and you understand the connection with Rocket, but you start understanding Endgame and his drinking problem,
yeah,
because,
oh,
he,
totally,
has gone through it, like I said, in the Ragnarok episode.
Yeah.
And how he still, in the midst of all his depression, tries to overcompensate by still joking about how he'll kill,
yeah,
him. He tries to make jokes. He says, well, he's never beat me. And Rocket says, yeah, he has. Well, he's never beat me twice. And he's,
right,
like, okay, well, this better be some hammer you're getting because he's easily killing you. My point is,
right,
like, I just,
right,
love that,
right,
he's still trying to be arrogant Thor, and yet we're seeing the vulnerability of, like, his whole journey. This is chapter 4 of 5 or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's always interesting to me. I may have said this before, but one of the artists that I follow, Matt Taylor, that does a lot of these amazing Mondo Marvel movie posters, he'll start working on these designs often based on kind of the trailers, and then he'll go see it and then kind of release a poster pretty quickly after the premiere. And he always talks about how with Infinity War, he had the poster pretty much finished and it really focused on Steve and Tony, you know, kind of not surprisingly, because those have always been the main characters, and obviously Thor featured, but not as prominently. And after this movie, he was like, oh, well, Thor was basically the main character of the movie, like the main Avenger. His story was so prominent that he went back and redesigned the whole thing to make Thor a lot more of the center, because his story, to me, is so powerful and I think resonated so much with everybody. And I think you're right. I think that is so on Hemsworth. Like that performance he gives is what sells it.
Right. And I know we've said this, but if you want to rewatch this movie in a fun new way, think about this movie that while you're watching it as Thanos being the hero and him trying to fulfill his destiny, and think of like Thor almost as the villain.
Yeah.
Standing in his way. And the writers talk about that a little bit. And obviously it's not true. Like we're pulling for Thor, obviously. But with that even in mind, it kind of changes the context of how you view some of this stuff, you know, and the
right.
struggle of the entire film. So
here we're showing up in Nedavellir.
So we're just going to show up in Nedavellir. So this is where, as soon as it says that title on the bottom, hit pause, Robbie. That's it. That's
oh,
it.
There it is.
Hit pause
okay.
there. 1:14:41. That is part one of Avengers Infinity War. I hope you guys have enjoyed this as much as I have. I hope this translates for you. Our hope is that if you even want, if you're as nerdy as we are, you could listen to our podcast while watching the movie like we did, and it will line up for you, and that could be extra fun. But if nothing else, we hope it feels like you were watching the film while you were driving in your car.
Yep. That's the most we can ever give, is just if we can't ourselves make a Marvel film, at least we can make it feel like you're watching a Marvel film.
We tried. This has been really fun. I can't wait for next week. Next week, we're going to finish this movie, which is unbelievable. We'll then get to rank it where we think it sits.
And yes, although we're gonna wait on our rankings for Infinity War until after Endgame.
True, fair.
So very after fair. Part two of our Endgame episode, we will finally unveil our full Infinity Saga rankings minus Spider-Man Far From Home, as we've said before.
Absolutely. As always, you can reach out to us on social media. Let us know what you think of this. Let us know what you think of this movie. Ask us some questions at the FFW podcast. Also, Robbie and I, as we promise, are going to have some fun little things coming up. So on Thursday, we have a Marvelette already. Kind of catching you up on some little things. Yep. And Robbie and I are maybe looking into going live again on social media, on Instagram. Maybe you could come join us while you're watching the movies. You can ask us some questions. Right. You can hit us up. We'd love to just interact with you guys. So this has been fun. I hope it's been fun for you guys. Friends from Work is what the podcast is called. Anywhere podcasts are found, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, etc. Also, we have a website, the FFWpodcast.com. We check those contact section emails. We try to respond if we can. Thanks again for listening. If you can subscribe, if you can review, we love it. We appreciate it. It helps us. And we can't wait to see you guys next week on Friends from Work when we talk about Infinity War Part 2.
Woo!
So we'll see you then on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.